Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast. This is episode 114.
114, we just discussed this.
My bad.
Just a few off.
Look, my wife went out of town yesterday, so I got left at home alone with the kids. I was up at 4 till 5:30 trying to put a one-year-old back to sleep. So I'm still a little daisy, you know, a little doozy, right? So
I thought it was your wake-up time anyway. You 4 a.m.
5:30, dude. Yeah. But my bedtime is normally like 9:30, and I didn't get to bed till like 11.
Kids will do that.
Yeah, well, I'm thrown off. They do a good job of keeping you on your toes. So
we need our wives, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I need you back. Yeah. Get back. The kids are home alone right now. So don't call CPS on me. But if you do, it'll probably give me a little bit of a break.
Claire's old enough.
Yeah, in between the time. Yeah. Where I get them back, I can get some good sleep. Yeah. So, episode 114. Guys, today we're going to do something a little bit different. It's just myself and Kel. We have Stephanie with us as well. She's an amazing, you know, videographer, editor. She's been a part of the team now for, what, 3 or 4 months, 5 months, something like that?
I think since March.
Since March.
Yeah.
Whenever that is. 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 or 4 months.
But she's been kicking ass for us. So yeah, she's behind the cameras. Today what she's going to do is we're just going to do more of a Q&A. So we did ask us questions on different topics or whatever.
We haven't really read them. She's going to read them.
Yeah, she's going to read them to us and we'll just kind of shoot from the hip. And we wanted it to be something where we're not talking about just one specific topic. So this podcast will be jumping all over the place depending on what the question is.
Sounds like it'll be about 8 hours long.
No, there aren't that many questions.
there aren't too many.
No, we'll rapid fire.
Yeah, we'll try to keep it, 45 minutes or so.
A lot of them, I guarantee we could have full episodes on though.
Probably. Yeah. Probably. So we'll try to keep our answers short and sweet.
Yeah.
But it's us. So we'll do the best that we can. So go ahead, Steph. Let us know what the first question is.
Yep. So from Angel, I'm having a bit of an issue on coming up with a business plan and deciding whether or not partnering with the owner of the company I work for would be a good idea. Maybe drop some knowledge on choosing the right partners and what criteria they should meet. And as far as the business plan goes, do I even need one? Like with all the market data for my trade and all that. Thanks, guys.
Here's the deal. Business partnerships are something I'm becoming an expert in because I've had so many over the years.
Kel's had more than me. Kel's the proper person.
And a lot of them fail. The most successful one's been Trevor. And there's even been a lot to learn, obviously, in a great one.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, man. I don't think it's a good idea to partner with someone when it's already his business. Like if you guys have already a whole new venture you want to partner on, maybe that'd be a little bit different. But coming in as a partner into an existing business is always a little bit different because it's a relationship, right? And he's already kind of established or brought a business to a certain point. And there's always this weird battle on like what's fair. And that's huge because just like any relationship, there's like issues with codependency, who brings what to the table. Nobody wants to be dependent on somebody for a very long time, and nobody wants somebody depending on them for a very long time. And so what happens is there's like these weird control battles that happen. Well, I'm the superior and I want to be the one in control, and they start using different guilt trips to like, you know,
this
gain
thing,
power.
This thing
you
was
know?
Here and before you, and it's going to be here after.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of one thing that you should be concerned about. Yeah. But I think all business partnerships should really evaluate and be very transparent with each other on who brings what to the table and what the value is on that. And it needs to happen with like pay for what your involvement is in the company, and then there needs to be a direct correlation the value of what you bring to the table for that partnership in shares as well. Mm-hmm. And you need to lay it all out. And you need to also think long term when you're going into a partnership. You need to lay it all out, and then you need to say, okay, now here's the thing is over the years of this business, this is what you need to maintain to bring to the table. Or if we'd start bringing people in to delegate some of these duties to, you know, we need to like have a plan for that as well. Otherwise, there is going to be these weird festers of resentment that just are going to continue to compound over time. And so, you know, it's impossible to like lay it all out, but you need to do as much as you possibly can because it does happen. And then you have to get yourself in check and you got to have harder conversations later with people. And, you know, we've been through it and I've had other partnerships that haven't been through it and it just totally imploded. And so business partnerships are super,
tough.
There's a lot of value in them and there's a lot of,
there's a
not value.
I would say in the beginning, there's a lot of value when everybody's excited and they're trying to build something. And it starts getting messy when the money really starts flowing in. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, if the business is now generating enough revenue where people are making, you know, $250,000, $500,000 a year, then it gets to the point where, well, I'm doing more than that person, you know, or whatever, but yet the pay is equal or whatever it is. Right? So the issues in the beginning will not be there.
Right.
You're still kind of in the honeymoon phase of starting a business together. You guys are, you know, a band of brothers trying to build something special. And so there's something cool about that. But once you've built something special and the money's flowing in, that's when things can start getting, you know, a little murky. The waters get murky. There's always in partnerships with us, me and Kel are very, very similar in terms of we're willing to travel. We're willing to, you know, take risks. We're both good at sales. We're both good leaders. We're both good at motivating people to get what we need done, not only for ourselves, but for them and their families, right? They need to grow and evolve as individuals. And, you know, we make it a priority for self-improvement in our companies, especially on the sales side, because they're only limited based upon, you know, their mind, right?
Yeah.
So there's no ceiling when it's a commission-based job. And so we focused a lot on self-improvement in that regard. But then there's going to be times where, you know, somebody's going to get comfortable with a certain number.
Right.
So let's say there's two partners and one person's going to be very comfortable at $100,000 a year or $200,000 a year. And the other one wants to continue to evolve and make $500,000 a year or $1,000,000 a year. And so I would say in the beginning stages, make sure that you understand what each other's true intentions and goals long term are.
Mm-hmm.
Is your goal to build a company so that you could sell it and exit that business? Or is your goal to make $500,000 a year and then put people in place to operate that business to where you're just cashing checks? Because if one person's goal is like, hey, I'm happy with $200,000 a year.
Yeah.
And the other one's like, well, I want to make $1,000,000 a year. That's when things start getting a little murky, because once you get to $200,000 a year, that other partner is going to kind of pull back a little bit and not give as much to the business while you're still sitting there trying to push the business forward to get to the income level that you want to be at.
Right.
So in a contract or an agreement in terms of partnerships, there should be, you know, caps, salary caps. You know, hey, no partner can make over, you know, $1,000 a week as a salary, because at one point, you know, Kel had a partnership that back in the day that it no longer exists. And those partners wanted to try to squeeze Kel and Jeremy out of the business. And they were like talking to the attorney that was Kel's attorney and saying, hey, how do we do? And the attorney says, you can't do that based upon the operating agreement. And they wanted to try to salary themselves to the point to where there wasn't a whole lot of dividends or draws coming out of the company. If they put themselves on $1,000,000 a year salary, then, and there's only $200,000 left at the end of the year, then you split that between the partnerships. So there's some partners that aren't getting their fair share of what the operating agreement said. So there should be salary caps in an operating agreement. So you, yes, if you show up every single day and I don't, you make $1,000 a week just to manage the company or whatever it is. And then the rest comes out in dividends and draws. And so one, making sure your goals line up and match each other. And secondly, making sure that there's caps on how much salary can be taken from the business.
That up. Super real transparent conversations need to happen in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Then it needs to go to the operating phase, operating agreement phase.
Yes.
And that saved our bacon in that partnership. Otherwise, those guys would have taken all my relationships and they would have squoze us out.
Yep.
Because even though I wasn't there day to day and they got, so now they started getting resentments because they're like, well, we're cutting you all these checks. And I'm like, I'm managing all these relationships.
You were managing
from my
your
other
relationships
company.
And
I'm just not in the office day
to
day.
You were the money piece too.
Dude, it got really weird, man. Yeah. And like, so I learned a lot through it.
But did it get weird in the beginning or did it get weird when the company was profiting $4 million a year?
So, and that's the other thing that I'm glad you brought up, because
whatever it was,
everybody starts these these businesses and then they have their partnerships based on insecurities, right? Like, okay, well, I'm already busy running this business over here and that's going to be a lot on my plate. I don't think I could juggle both. So this is perfect. These guys can run the day-to-day operations. I'll bring the relationships. Well, they didn't see us day-to-day.
Yeah.
But they just saw all the work they were doing. They didn't see what I was doing because I wasn't there day-to-day. Yeah, and exactly. So what happens is they're like, well, we don't need Kel anymore. We have all the relationships. Yeah. Let's squeeze them out. And then they couldn't because luckily I'd already been through a failed business partnership before even that one. And I was able to have our attorney put voting rights in, which made it incapable for them to just vote us out. And then we also had all these salary caps in place so they couldn't just raise salaries on us and squeeze out our dividends, right? So that really protected us, and I learned a lot through that.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And then it also opened the door because the only option at that point was let's buy each other all out or divvy up the equity in this company and let's close it. And that gave us the opportunity to come to people like you and be like, hey, let's partner up on this over here. The salesmen want to come work for us. We're closing the company down. And then obviously he's given us the hindsight to create our operating agreements and have our business partnerships and be more transparent with each other for more successful one. The most successful business partnerships are the ones that do not create these codependencies and insecurities and let things fester. And you can lay it all out and table. One of the things that really makes me and Trev's business partnership so great is we don't necessarily need each other. Like if Trevor wants to go build a business and our relationship did fall apart, he's going to be successful. If I want to go, I can go build a different company without Trevor because we have skill sets that don't really, we don't really need. We just are stronger together. Mm-hmm. Right. And so absolutely, that's what a lot of people need to realize, like find a strength in a partner, but don't find a strength in a partner and partner with them just because you're insecure and they bring something to the table that you don't. Like find the value, put it all on paper, lay it all out, and then commit to it, and you'll have a much longer partnership that's going to be successful.
Yeah. Now, you brought up a good point. I'll finish with this, and then we can move on to the next question. Kel said something there. After that partnership fell apart, there were people that wanted to come work for him.
Right.
So, if you have partnerships, or you're going to have partnerships and you're an entrepreneur, treat your people right.
Mm-hmm.
So if something ever did happen that you're the go-to person, they want to still work with you and be with you. So if there's ever an issue, you have an entire workforce that's behind you because you treated them properly and they'll rally with you no matter what you decide to do. And that's what happened in this scenario. Next thing you know, a few years later, we build another $10 million
company. How you treat people should never change, okay? You shouldn't ever put yourself on a pedestal like you're above your salespeople. You're above your fulfillment people. You're above. But that's honestly like been the game changer in building a network of people that want to send us business and creating a network of people that want to come work for us.
Yeah.
It's like those guys wanted to come work for me because I'm not going to say names, but those people were treated like shit by the people that were running the day to day. And they saw how our other company operated.
And they're struggling right now financially. So they probably wish that didn't happen.
That's
so
true.
All right, next question.
Good one. So, good question, Angel.
Yeah.
Kilo_GT wants to know about pitching to investors.
Kilo_GT, that's
Kilo,
his name.
Kilo, dog?
Is that me? Is that my sub account?
Dude. I'm just joking. Kilo G. Did you ask a question under your freaking burner account?
That ain't my handle, dude.
Shit. I would say, you know, when you're talking about pitching investors, I think a lot of people, you know, only think about what they can gain from it, when in reality, your entire pitch shouldn't even be about you. It should be about how the investor has the ability to win in this scenario. Mm-hmm. And you have to make it completely obvious. It should be you should be talking about the value that you can bring to that individual, provided they act on this opportunity, right? You want to sell it as in they're missing out if they don't invest into this company. Now, a lot of people, when they pitch investors, oh, I know this is going to be great. I just know it. That's not enough.
Mm-mm.
You know, what's the data that you have that says, hey, this is the market. This is a $2 trillion market or a $10 billion market. And here's where I see things that are lacking.
Yeah.
And here's the solution that I'm providing in the industry. And here's how you have the ability to profit from it. So definitely make it all about the investor and not about you or the business itself as much. talk about the value that this opportunity can bring to that individual and make it something that they don't want to say no to. Make it easy for them to say yes.
I'll tell you how to do that part. Okay. Because I love that.
Yeah.
I get so annoyed at dreamers with no action. Okay. Mm. Do not come to me with this brilliant idea. Okay. That's just going to end up in the idea graveyard. Come in and show me what you've done to get it off the ground.
Amen.
You know, like ideas are great and there's a lot of them out there. Okay. And people have great ideas but they don't have action. Okay. And I know some people very close to me that are just big dreamers and they have great ideas, but they don't have any backbone enough to go out and take a risk and go all in on it and then bring something to me and says, dude, I've not only done all the market research, but I've gone all in on this myself. Because when you're talking to investors, they're betting on the jockey, right? And so when they come to me and they say, I want you to put your hard-earned money for this, me to take this to the next level. I don't want another job. Mm-mm. I don't want another business to run as an investor. I'm betting on the jockey. So come to me and show me like, dude, you've put all your life savings into this thing and you've already got it to this point and now you need it to scale. That's a deal that I want to invest into because I believe in the guy that's already brought it to a certain point and now he just needs money to take it to scale. Mm-hmm. I don't want to invest into some bright idea that needs to get off the ground and it's going to take a ton of my contacts, resources, management, work and some of like I don't want that as an investor. I already have a business to run.
If you're if you're an investor, you've already done something to the point where you've put in a lot of time, a lot of hours, a lot of sacrifice to the point where you have the money and now you want your money to work for you.
Exactly.
Right. But I would say Kel's 100% accurate that investors more bet so on the jockey than they do on the business. Mm-hmm. You know, there's marketing businesses that have $0 a month in revenue. And then there's marketing companies that do hundreds of millions of dollars a year in revenue. It's the exact same industry. The only difference is the individual behind the business that's propelling it or pushing it forward in terms of their vision, in terms of what they were willing to invest in order to make it work.
Exactly.
And so even on Shark Tank or whatever, they talk about, well, how much do you have invested into this? Or what are your sales?
Yeah.
Right? They want to know that somebody is doing something already and not just asking for a handout or a bailout or looking for the easy way in order to make a business work. And so, again, if you haven't even structured an entity, even if the you have no money, but when we were doing the funding stuff back in the day, you know, people would say, hey, I want 50 grand for my startup, right? And it said, well, how much do you have invested into this? Have you even had, do you have an LLC? Do you have a business plan? Do you have that? And they don't have anything.
Right.
So they haven't invested anything of their own into the business, but yet they want somebody else to invest 50 grand of their hard-earned money into their dream.
Yep.
That just doesn't make any sense to me. Make sure that you're willing to invest into your dream just as you're asking somebody else to invest in your dream.
That's what I look for. That's what I look for is when someone comes to me like, dude, I've already got off the ground. I got 2 employees. Our sales are this. We're making this. I think it can become more profitable if I have more money because I can scale here. I have all this data. That's great. But I'm actually already like kind of thinking, huh, maybe I do want to get in on this deal because they said I've already invested everything I have into it. I'll invest into a guy that's worked 3 damn jobs and stashed up 20-30 grand and already went all in with everything he's got and he now needs some money to get to the next level, then I will some amazing idea a bunch of research behind it.
You know what Warren Buffett says?
What?
He will not invest into a business unless the owner of that business has failed at 2 other businesses.
That's actually probably a really good idea.
Because they have experience now.
Yeah.
Those 2 other businesses that failed, they learned from those businesses and they're not going to make those same mistakes.
Mm-hmm. And that person has shown that they've got a backbone and they're willing to continue to risk and go all in on something, even despite the failure that they've already faced. And that's honestly, that's pretty powerful.
That's very powerful.
That's where you really are starting to get that thick skin you need in business.
Most people are like, oh, you failed at 2 businesses. Last thing I'd want to do is invest into you. You can't make anything work.
Right.
But that's exactly what Warren Buffett looks for, provided he was going to invest into a company.
He's like, let me see your
resume
first.
He wants to know that you have experience. Right. In other words, failures. You cannot get experience without some sort of failure along the way. So
that's a good question. Kilo
right.
G.
So building off
hey, thanks for dropping that on your Walmart account.
So building off of that, eatright_1 says, I have around $5,000 to $10,000 to invest. What can I do?
I mean, this is a hard one for me because, I mean, I started my first business with like $7,000, right? I went and bought phones. I freaking started it in the basement of my house. Like, I went and got phone lines and computers. I talked some people into coming and working with me after hours. And so, you know, it depends on what you're trying to invest into, man. Like, if you're trying to invest into something like that, that you're just trying to get off the ground and, you know, hey, it is possible. But a lot of times people nowadays say, dude, that's not enough to get something off the ground. And, you know, maybe the market is a little different than it used to be. And so I always see this question, and it's like, invest into coaching. And honestly, there's been so much power in coaching for me that I would co-sign on that too. So, I mean, this is like a hard one because, man, I went all in with only like $7,000 to get my baby off the ground before I started making its first sales.
Yeah, but you had some experience in sales, right?
Yeah.
So I would say it just depends on what type of experience this individual has, right? If they're a halfway decent marketer, then set up an LLC, fund it with $5,000 and start running your ads and saying, hey, you know, use me for marketing. You know, I'm good at what I do or whatever it is, right? So if you don't have any skills, then that money should go to acquiring skills or information. And I would say the best way to do that, yes, coaching or mentoring, because, you know, you are responsible for how your life turns out. So you want to surround yourself with individuals that teach you how to think right. The mindset side of business, right? Like $5,000 or $10,000 is nothing in the grand scheme of things. And so you can get that back. But, you know, you want to have the proper mindset going into a business so that you have a higher probability of success at winning. And so I wouldn't say necessarily getting a one-on-one coach because you don't have a whole lot to coach one-on-one. Again, unless it's just mindset, I would find a networking
group,
in coaching your group. Even if you don't have a niche, you know, look at Adam Neese with Certain Pay that we had on the podcast. He was a sales rep and he invested into the Apex coaching group and he found a business partner, walked away from his sales job and started Certain Pay, a merchant account processing company. Yeah. So he's setting people up with merchant accounts, which is what he sold for a different company, right?
Yeah.
And so he saw some
things. There's a huge network power of like in the group setting like that as well.
A lot of them, if they're in that type of environment, even if they have a business, they're always looking for the next opportunity. Right. So how many different businesses have we ended up, you know, investing in or, you know, starting up because of those groups? Now, all of those individuals already have other businesses, but everybody's looking to partner with people, figure out ways to make money with people. So one, you get to tap into the mindset side of things. You get to surround yourself with people and be in proximity of individuals that are trying to level up, that are already successful. So one, your network is growing. So when you do start a business, I can reach out to Kel and say, hey, Kel, I'm having trouble here. Can you help me out? Kel's going to do it because he sees you all the time.
Do you know somebody?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Tapping into the network that has a network too, right? So that's very powerful. Relationships, right? You can't go at anything alone. You're going to have to build relationships. And that's a perfect spot to start one in terms of building relationships, working on your mindset, and being around people that are opportunity driven, meaning they're always looking to invest money. And eventually that thing that's going to come to mind will happen, you know, within the first 3 or 6 months of you joining the group. And then there's going to be somebody in that group that might be familiar with that niche that you can lean on.
Right.
And then at that point, you know, that individual could either help you start that business in that industry, or you could partner with that individual, you know, maybe in a different market. Maybe they're in Texas and you're in Florida and, you know, they want to take their business that they have in Texas and take it over to Florida. And you guys have created a great relationship. You set up a different entity, boom, and now you're running a business. Secondly, there's been people that have joined the group that are now working as COOs of companies of individuals that they met inside that group. So there's other opportunities outside of starting businesses, depending on what your strengths are. But I would say if you only have $5,000 or $10,000, you don't have a lot of experience, you don't have a whole lot of strengths, you got a little bit of discipline in terms of being able to save money, which is good. That's a great sign. Yeah. But you need to be working on yourself and developing yourself so that you can become the best leader, the best entrepreneur, have the right mindset, because it's going to be tough. So
there's also... I agree with everything 100%. It really does depend on where you're at in that phase. And it depends on the group that you choose too. So correct. If you're like, hey, I'm going to go drop $5,000 on this group for the next year. One, you're going to want to find a group that's, even if they're not in your niche, they're in the same type of phase. They're like-minded. They're taking the same type of risk at the same stage of you in your life. Like in Apex, there's a few different levels, right?
Yeah.
And you're around those like-minded people, and there's a ton of power in that, like you said, in the proximity. But if you already, like the dude's handle is like eat_right, right? So if he's like in the nutrition space, he's an expert. He's like, I just need more clients. How do I invest this $5,000 or $10,000? It's like, maybe you do need to just find someone that can help you build some ads that's got some success. You can learn from them, and where, you can go and just, hey, run ads and get some clients.
Where would be a great way to find somebody?
Exactly. In a group.
In a group.
Or off our podcast.
Yeah. We're off the podcast. Yeah.
We've got some great marketers on here.
Yeah.
I mean, like if you're already like, I have all these skill sets, I just need more clients. Like you can get more clients with $5,000-$10,000.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. So, but it might take linking up with a good marketer to help you build your ads, gain some knowledge from them, you know, pay them what they're worth as well. So yeah, there's a ton of value in mentoring.
So D_high_ asks, any idea when you guys are going to start a mastermind or group, take my money?
Well, we can do the last part pretty easily. If you want, I can send you
wire
instructions. You know, it is a write-off and it's a write-on for us. So, yeah, I mean, that's obviously something that we've talked about now for a year and a half, and it's something that we really, really want to do. And what we've said is, look, we don't want a half-hearted commitment to something like mm-hmm. this. I mean, people are trusting us with their money, you know, on a month-to-month basis to, you know, get information that's going to serve them and their business.
Yeah.
And the last thing that we want to do is just throw a group together, not being 100% committed, being distracted with the things that we currently have going right now, which is our businesses. And so, you know, we've made it a priority and a goal to try to fire ourselves by the end of this year from mm-hmm. more day-to-day operations where people don't have to come to us with the problems, and we're putting leaders in place that can do the day-to-day stuff. This is ultimately going to free up some time for us to where we can start focusing on this. I wouldn't be surprised if we have something launched within the next 6 months.
Trev's right, man. Like, so I actually had a goal of throwing our first event like this October because I knew Corona was going to fizzle out and everything. And then as we've started giving our leaders the reins more, I've already delegated a lot, and I do feel like I have the free time to start actually really focusing on things. I've kind of wrapped up the book. You're almost done with your pilot stuff.
No.
You know, no?
I got a letter yesterday.
They denied you?
Not denied me. I have to get a psychiatric evaluation.
Oh, that's
called a human motivation something study. Prevention,
but there's
study.
Yeah, there's something you're getting through, right?
I would say
by the end of the year we'll really start planning some things. Here's the thing is, like, we also have to get on the same page as far as like the vision of it too. Like, we don't want to throw an event and sell you guys something unless we have something built already that's going to bring a shit ton of value, whether it is like a monthly curriculum where we meet monthly, whether it is like a course, whether there's different levels to it, whatever it is, we want it to be badass when we roll it out that's going to bring value to you guys. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, we really haven't had like a for sure, like, hey, this is the path, right? Like, we've talked about a lot of things, like, hey, man, maybe we do a course on this or all these topics, or maybe we just start with like some monthly coaching and we start building a community. Like, we've had all these conversations, but we haven't actually like defined it and built it. And when we have kind of like a clear vision and we know the values there, we'll launch like a first event, we'll do some things, we'll bring everyone together, and I think it will be badass.
I can't wait to,
I know,
you know, meet a lot of people in person that has been rolling with us for,
we know that's the next step for us.
That's the next step. So we're phasing out of what our duties are internally so that we can take that next step.
I had no desire to delegate as much as I've delegated until this, the last couple of years when we've built this. And so that is the whole reason that we have been delegating and passing on these duties to our leaders, is to do that. So it's coming.
It's coming.
Okay. So actually, building off of this, the next question is Cowboy James, and he wants to know, what are the best events to meet business people and network?
Here's the thing. We've gone through all different types of events. We've gone to big trade shows, and you know what? We've pulled great relationships and clients from that. We've gone to, obviously the most powerful things have been the
the groups that are higher level that we have stayed very active in. Like, we've really built and cultivated badass relationships with not only the leaders of the group, but other like badass similar entrepreneurs at the same level as us in those groups. But you have to start somewhere. We've even been to the BNIs. We've been to the corporate alliances, which are just the local, I don't want to say shitty ones because we got value from those, but we wanted to move past that very quickly. So I think the most important thing to answer a question is like, dude, wherever you're at, just get started. Yeah. Go to a local one.
Yeah.
Practice the art of being approaching and approachable, because that's where you're going to start like finding the right people to really try and do stuff with within your network, right? Yeah. So just get started, man. Just get started at a local one and think of it as practice. Go to BNI, shake hands, get good at like explaining what it is that you do so that you do kind of attract the right people.
In other words, just get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Get
like they say, they call it your 30-second commercial, right? Yeah. And it sounds cheesy, but it is true. Like, hey, this is what I do. This is what I, you know, how I bring value. Like, this is my jam. And then that way people know real quick, like, oh, cool. Like, dude, I actually am in business-to-business services as well. I think there's some things we could do together. Like, start practicing that stuff, because there is a ton of power in it. And as you grow your network and you get in higher level mastermind groups and stuff like that, more opportunities are going to be presented. You're going to be more experienced. But you just got to get started somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a good one, I would check out the, you know, Apex, Ryan Steumann's group.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a good one.
Because there's levels to it.
Yeah, there's levels to it. There's the bottom level, which is the entourage, middle-level entrepreneur, and then the high level's the executives.
Yeah.
And so no matter where you're at in business, there's a level for you and a price point that will probably fit what your budget is, right? Yeah. The higher levels, you're talking $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000 a month. Middle levels, not close to that. I think it's $1,000, $2,000 a month. The lower level, I think it's like $5,000 or $6,000 a year or something like that. So get started. But the reason why I see value in that group is because they do fly-ins where you actually get to meet people in person.
It's not just online.
If it's an online, just a Zoom coaching group, that's great. You can get good information for you, but the networking is really where the power lies, because you can get information out of a book.
Yeah.
You can get information for free on YouTube. You can get information like on our podcast, but you don't get to network plus get the information.
And there is and the Zoom meetings is throughout the month too. Yeah, so like once a month or quarter, depending on the level that you're at, you're going to be doing meetups, the ones that you can. But there's also, you know, monthly calls, weekly calls. Like there's so much to them. Like I think Steumann's group,
and Steumann's
so committed to his group, man, like at every level.
Yeah, he does.
The guy's been amazing. So I would say definitely check him out. And here's the other last thing before we go on to the next question. There's so many different professionals in different industries within these groups. And not only are there a lot of synergies, whether it's referral partners or whatever, but dude, like in every level of his group, there's like multiple insurance agents and they end up finding ways to work together, even though they're competitors.
Yeah.
And it's like really more like you're building alliances and just helping each other grow, because there's plenty of business to go around. And so those are just the type of people you want to be around.
Well, not only that, there's a lot of vetted people in the group in terms of like, if you need marketing and you're struggling there's a good marketer. And then you get in the group like, hey, who in the group is the go-to marketer?
Yeah.
And there's going to be three or four people that say, dude, this person's good.
Yeah.
This guy, this girl, or whatever. And then you don't have to sit there and waste your money going through marketer to marketer and trying to find the good one. The group itself is already vetted and networked the group. And so you ask around, they're going to point you in the right direction.
Yep.
So
exactly.
All right. Coulter the Credit Doc wants to know, how do you know if you're a good leader?
What's up, doy? Coulter. It's Coulter. I would say, you know, a good leader, one, first off, never feels like he's doing enough or she's doing enough. You know, that's one of the downer parts about being a leader is you're always evaluating yourself and feeling like you're falling short. Mm-hmm. But that's also why you're a high performer, is because you always feel like you're falling short and always feel like you need to be doing something more.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of pressure, you know, in terms of being a leader. I would say a leader, one, listens to their people. A leader tries to create opportunities for their employees with inside their organization. Doesn't speak down to them, speaks to them in more of an uplifting way, even if it's a negative conversation, to highlight what some of the things that they do great are, and then say, here's where you can improve. A good leader is an individual that when you speak, people listen.
Yeah.
Because you're an individual that does everything that you're telling them to do, right? Or they've seen you do the work, that you're not asking them to do something that you wouldn't be willing to do yourself, right? A good leader just has the ability to pull out the best in each individual, no matter really where they're at, right? Because each individual's different and is motivated by different things. Some people like, you know, appreciation. Some people don't give a shit. They just want the money.
Right.
And some people you're better at talking shit to. I know, right. I know to me when I was a young sales rep, if somebody talked shit to me, like a team leader or something like that, you can't do this. Mm-hmm. Oh, you that, prove it, you know?
Yeah.
So almost negative, reinforcement to a certain extent, which made me want to prove somebody wrong and produce. So there's people like that that don't need the pat on the back and the appreciation, because if anything, that might demotivate them. I needed, you know, almost like, hey, I bet you can't hit $15,000 this week.
Right.
You know, fuck you. I'm going to show you that I can. Why don't we bet on it?
Right.
I'll bet you $100 that I can. Right. And so I always want to prove myself. And so if somebody says I can't do something, I want to prove it. If somebody's always telling me good job, I'm going to get a little bit more relaxed and think I'm in a safe position inside of a company. Right. And so everybody's going to be unique and different in terms of the way that they need to be motivated.
Right.
It's like a coach on a basketball team or a football team. It's their job to put those people in a position to succeed. You know, you're not going to put a, you know, an individual that's a terrible 3-point shooter, or your Shaq's not going to be a point guard. He's going to be low down by the hoop so that he can get rebounds. You as the coach has to put him there so that he can bring the most value to the team. Right. We've had sales reps that aren't the best sales reps. So we move them over to fulfillment. Why? Because we see that they show up every day. They have good energy, good attitude. They're just not the best at sales. So where else could we put this individual so that they have an opportunity to, one, stay with us, continue to be employed by us, and have an opportunity to shine, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's really up to you to understand that each individual can't be motivated by the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And to be able to figure that out, all managing all those different personalities. That's what a coach does on a team, is brings the A to D players together for one specific purpose. And that's to build something special.
Right.
And so the idea is to try to figure out how to do that with a bunch of different personalities and make sure everybody feels valued, appreciated, but at the same time, they're all motivated and wanting to perform.
I mean, just a couple additions. I mean, first of all, we've seen the most success when we know our culture is great, right? So all those things are phenomenal. And how you know you're a great leader is when you feel like your culture is constantly growing, and your people that you are leading feel comfortable coming to you and looking for ways to continue growing, right? Like a lot of our best leaders that we're creating right now, or we're not creating because they're putting in the work. We're just leading, right? And they're naturally evolving as leaders. They're doing the work because they have been able to come to us. They've been able to come and say, hey, man, where can I grow? Where can I improve? I want more. They want to stay within your ecosystem. They're not looking to get out, right? Like, they're looking to grow within you. They'll want to impress you. Like, I know when I worked under certain leaders, man, I wanted to impress them, right? Like, there's the competitive aspect you brought up. Like, hey, man, like, you know, competitive, like, I don't think you can do it. So they want to prove they can. But like, I always wanted to impress them and show them like, I'm capable of doing this. And, you know, I can do this myself, and I can show them that I can improve here, and it's going to improve the whole company here. Like, when you see that you've got those people coming up in your company, that means you're doing a pretty good job as a leader. And then probably the other thing that I'd add on to that is like, you know you're a good leader when you know that you always still need leadership yourself too. Leaders need leaders, man. Mm. And so when you're seeking out, your ego isn't to a level of like, I don't need leaders. I am a great leader, and people are going to do what I say, and I know that this is the right way, and this is my way, and blah, 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 blah. Like, you're getting, you know, you're really suppressing yourself. Like, you always need a leader, even if you're a great leader. And sometimes those leaders are needed so you don't get to those points in your business. And you have somebody that's like, hey, man, well, maybe you should try this. And you got to be open to trying that. Or, you know, maybe that way is not going to work out. And, you know, it's not about being right all the time, right? And so you got to find people that you always aspire to and that you can reach out to for leadership as well. And I think that's a sign of a good leader. And you know, if you're a good leader, is like, hey, am I willing to continue to study leadership and have leadership for me so that I can continue being a great leader for the people I'm leading.
Yeah, the best leaders are have a mindset of constant improvement.
Yeah.
Right. They're always trying to improve.
Yeah.
Basically, right?
Ryan Stuman has leaders for him. Yeah. I look to Ryan for things. I talk to Ryan about, hey man, this is things that I need help with.
Yeah.
Or Jeff, who's my coach within the Apex group. Like, I find leaders to kind of help, like, hey man, like, work through it this way. And I'm just open to getting their leadership so that I can be a better leader.
Yep.
So I think that's another thing I'd add on to that.
AM underscore installs 13 wants you to talk about the person / moment you knew it's time to change. Go full send on you.
You know, for me, I think we've talked about this before in a previous podcast. For me, it was when I got the call and my wife was pregnant and she said, I'm pregnant. I said, oh, fuck. It was just a natural just reaction. I mean, I didn't really, you know. And she's like, well, thanks for making me feel better about it, you know. Yeah. And I was like, well, shit. I guess I was just, you know, thinking about myself in the moment. Where are you at? Da, da, da. We went to lunch, all that good stuff. But that's when I really knew that, you know, hanging out with the bros had to kind of stop, you know. I knew that the decisions that I made on a day-to-day or weekend basis, because I made a lot of bad decisions on the weekends, those decisions were no longer going to just affect me.
Right.
I didn't give a shit about myself. You know, it was just about making money, partying, having fun, you know, that whole thing for a period of time, because anything that happened to me, it happened to me.
Yeah.
Right. I was okay taking the brunt of whatever the consequence was for my actions. I didn't care if I went to jail. That didn't bother me. It was all good. I was surrounded by people that were going in and out of jail, all that. That was pretty normal. So that wasn't a fearful thing for me. But when you start bringing another life into the world and your decisions now have the ability to affect another individual, a child, a baby, they don't deserve to have an individual that's selfish, that are only worried about themselves. So that's when I kind of buried that old individual and really stepped into my own in terms of I need to take shit serious and really create a situation to where I'm securing my financial future.
Yeah.
That's when it happened for me. You know, it doesn't happen like that for everybody. Some people it does. I've known people that, you know, have had babies and they still have fucked up and, you know, in and out of jail, whatever. But for me, that was the thing that made me start taking shit serious, where I was okay taking a back seat and driving something a little bit nicer, living in. I didn't care anymore about all that shit. I cared about one thing and one thing only. Let's fucking get it. Let's secure the financial future for my family.
Right.
That's kind of when my mindset changed.
I had a very similar moment when I found out I was having a baby and I was in high school.
Did you say,
oh,
fuck?
Oh, yeah. And I thought of every single way I could get out of it, too. Mm-hmm. I thought of, like, man, like, is it really mine?
Well, you know, we talked about adoption. You were, what, 17, 18, something like that?
I was 17 years old, 17, man. And, you know, I actually quit school and went and got a job. I started out pushing carts because, you know, I had a broken arm. I'd been doing a lot of dumb shit in my life. I was just like pushing carts. But going back to trying to impress my boss, I always wanted to move up, man. Yeah. Like, I was just like pushing carts with one arm. And then once my arm healed, and I was like the best fucking cart pusher at Smith's, bro. And then they promoted me and I liked feeling promoted, right? So then I like looked for another job that I could make even more. Like, I just wanted more all the time. But the reason where that stemmed from is a way earlier memory when I got laughed at. Okay, I went, I had a home teacher come over. We live in a Mormon community. I'm like 8 or 9 years old. He said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I said, I want to be a millionaire, because I grew up in a family that didn't have a lot of money. Money was a big problem, right? And he said, okay. He laughed at me and he says, well, what do you want to do to become a millionaire? And I was like, I don't know. I just want to be a millionaire. And he laughed at me. And I knew in that moment, even as an 8 or 9 year old child, I knew, like, no one's going to do it but me.
Yeah.
Right. Like people are never going to believe in me. Right. I just knew that. And it's always stuck with me. Even that weird memory of being laughed at with the first time that I said I wanted to be a millionaire, I got laughed at for that. And I just knew in that moment, like, it is only on me. And I knew that my whole life. I hustled a lot. Even in elementary school, I was selling shit. Middle school, I was selling shit. High school, I was selling shit. Sometimes I did some unethical shit to get shit to sell, you know, but I was always hustling because I knew from even just being a child in my upbringing and being laughed at for saying I want to be a millionaire, that it was on me. Mm-hmm. I had to figure it out, and it was going to have to be a self-made thing. So so that always stuck with me, man. But once I had my kid, it was go time, right? Because I already had that in me, like, it's on me. So when I found out I was having a kid,
Now it's on you.
It was like, okay,
sure,
I'm going to be the best fucking cart pusher because one day I am going to be a millionaire. I'm going to figure out how. Yeah. But I knew even at those entry level jobs, like I had to be my best.
Yeah.
All right. Mike Zwack 91 asks, is there a specific percent of gross slash net revenue to not exceed when looking at commercial slash industrial spaces?
Rent wise, like versus revenue is what I think he's asking. Like, what percentage of your revenue should go towards a lease of a building?
Oh,
right.
And we've never factored that.
Yeah, we've never factored that. We've made decisions based upon where we're trying to go, not right. where we're at growth. The moment.
Room for right? growth.
Exactly.
Forced
that's
growth.
That's what we've done. We just barely signed another lease on another spot so that we could double the size of 60-day credit repair. And we don't necessarily just look at the finances and be like, hey, the goal is to double in size. Mm-hmm. So what's it going to take to double in size? It doesn't matter what the revenue is. If that's the goal, again, commit and figure it out later.
We've
right?
always
and
been so, willing to take a pay cut to get the space we need to get eventual raise.
It's worked every time.
It's worked every time.
It's worked every time.
It was scary every time, too.
It was scary.
At one point, we quadrupled our rent. We went from like, doubled?
It was
only like $3,500 a month. We went to almost $12,000, so we tripled.
Yeah.
And that was scary. I remember, like, I was the one that was like, I don't know if this is a good move. I remember that.
I was like, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. You're like, dude, we need space.
But, I wouldn't do it off of a percentage of revenue. I would do it off of what you're trying to accomplish. Yeah. Now, if you've built a business and you just plan on maintaining the business, you know, then maybe you can run some numbers or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I would say right now, you know, doing $13, $14 million a year revenue, you know, that space over there is going to be like $7,000 a month. And then this space over here is like $11,000 or $12,000 a month. So what does that put us at? Almost like $17,000, $18,000 a month in rent on, you know, roughly what, 1.2 million, you know, or 1.1 million a month. In revenue. So, you know, you can run the numbers there yourself if you want.
Here's what we looked at.
1%, 2%, something like that.
We looked more at like, okay, we know we can double leads. So we know we can double salespeople and we know that will double revenue, but it's also going to double fulfillment costs, right? So we looked at all those things like, okay, we just need more space.
Well, we just said, let's just buy a space or get into a space that's bigger than what we need. Because it's a 5-year lease,
right?
And so you don't want to get into a space that just fits where your needs are today, because then you're capping yourself or you're going to just hit a plateau, you know, maybe on year one or year two. Within 3 years of being in this space, we had capped out this space when originally we thought it was maybe just a little too big for what we needed, a little too nice, a little too expensive. But we knew if we committed to something that was a little bit bigger, a little bit nicer, it was going to be a better environment for our people. The culture would be a little bit better because they're going to a nicer place to work.
Yeah, if you have clients coming in too, that's the other thing. Like, dude, the impression you make when they walk in the door is going to determine if you're closing that deal or not. Sometimes.
Yeah,
not always. Sometimes you are enough to close that deal.
Some people say, you know, the deal's closed before they even find the conference room, right? Based upon how your office
looks. Yeah, like you go to First Form right now and you're a whatever.
An influencer.
Influencer
that they want to hire to promote their product, you're going to go in and look around and be like, holy shit, these guys don't cut corners.
Yeah, you're already sold when you walk into the headquarters.
Yeah,
I haven't been there, especially the new one, but you know, we've seen it online. Yeah. It's like, holy shit, they've went all in on that thing.
So yeah, just keep in mind what your goals are. If your goal is to expand over the next 5 years, get into a space a little bit bigger than what you need right now, and it's going to force you to fill in those spaces. We had empty desks, empty computers and phones, and we're like staring at them. We're like, fuck, we need to hire.
That's another benefit of
get people in there.
Being a forward thinker or a future thinker, dude, because leases are typically 3 to 5 years. Yeah. So if you're like, oh, I only need 500 more square feet for this one extra thing, like that, you're just handicapping yourself after just a few months of moving in and growing.
Yeah.
And now you're stuck there for 3 to 5 years, right? So you do kind of got to consider like your growth over the next few years, not just a few months.
Don't
or
make
a year.
Decisions on where you're at today. Make decisions on where you want to be.
Yeah.
So, exactly. And it will be uncomfortable. So get used to it.
All right. How many more questions do you guys want to answer today? Because we could split this into it like a two-part episode.
No, let's just do one more and we'll call it.
Yeah, because we're
just do one more.
Yeah, we're almost, yeah.
All right. Aaron Knows Best wants to know about expensing through your business.
Expensing through your business?
different.
Like,
question.
Are you talking about just bookkeeping
yeah,
and stuff?
It's just, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Expensing through your business, hire a good accountant at Easier Accounting, and everything will be taken care of. So let's do one more question.
All right. Dan the Roofing Man says, it's going so good, it's almost too good to handle, or is it overwhelming and stressful?
Oh, is he asking us, or is he saying his business is? I know Dan, he's a badass. He has a cool business.
Yeah.
Dan, is things so good, bro? That you're getting comfortable, that's not a good thing, but it is at the same time.
All right.
No, what is, I don't know if he's asking us if things are,
what's the question again? Ask it again.
Going so good, it's almost too good to handle, or is it overwhelming and stressful?
Both.
Yeah.
Usually if it's going so good, it's because you've overwhelmed yourself and you are stressed, but you stepped up to the plate in those type of scenarios. And you did what you needed to do while you were overwhelmed and stressed in order to make it so good. What you guys need to understand, usually when you're overwhelmed and stressed, it's going to put you in a situation where the money's going to be really, really good eventually, right? And that's really where we're at right now. That's really where we're at right now in business. Everything is really, really good financially for us, but we got overwhelmed and we've got stressed because we keep saying yes and more investments and, you know, we keep taking a backseat to really rewarding ourselves. I mean, if we wanted, we could each have a mansion and, you know, have acres of property and, you know, live high on the hog right now. But we don't do that. You know, we continue, as Kel always talks about, to be future thinkers, keep money in the bank, continue to invest into a brighter future, which is what we've done 5 years ago, 10 years ago, which has put us in the situation that we're in now. So why change? The only thing that we're trying to change is the overwhelming and stressful parts. In terms of, again, creating leaders in our company to where if there's four or five leaders in our business, that stress and that overwhelming pressure can be spread across multiple people rather than just on myself and Kel.
Yeah.
And then at that point, the idea is being overwhelmed and stressed, that doesn't ever go away. If you're operating businesses, the idea is to get to the point where you have somebody else operating your businesses and the business is paying you rather than you working for the business. Mm-hmm. And there is a big difference between self-employed and business owner.
Yeah.
Right now, we are self-employed. We show up. We still have to move the business forward every day. We are very high paid employees of our own business. But the idea is to eventually move over to the business owner side. 60-day credit repair, Coulter, the credit doc that asked the question about being leader. He's been a great leader. He's done a great job with that business. And now we pull checks from that company. One, he was given an opportunity to step up and now his life is going to be enhanced because we took a step back from that company, which is what we want to do now with our accounting firm, is give somebody else the opportunity to step up, become a great leader, grow themselves as an individual and financially. That credit repair company sends tens of thousands of dollars to us every single month without us having to do a whole lot of heavy lifting. And the idea is to do that for now, Easier Accounting, so that we can free up more time and have fun with you guys, coach you guys, help you guys get to the point to where we're at in terms of maybe eventually stepping back from your business. Mm-hmm. And maybe all you are is the individual that's getting attention on your company and you push that attention in the front doors of your business and you have operators and leaders operating it on a day-to-day basis, where all you need to do is just be yourself, go talk about the business, get business in the front door and have it be handled by awesome people.
Yeah, you're always going to be, if it's your business, you're always going to be a visionary of that business. But man, I've been in a scary situation. It's always scary to me, even right now, as we're trying to kind of like, the cool thing is we're delegating things to go into a new direction, which is going to be a whole new project for us, right? Because it's really not fulfilling if you're ever like just totally foot off the gas. I actually did that one time when I was going through a divorce. The business was run. It seemed like things were good. Took my foot off the gas. Wanted to date chicks again, you know, doing all this stuff.
And you
Holy shit, dude.
And you did.
Did I feel that plummet come though, man? I went from 50 G's a month to 4 or 5 G's a month. I couldn't even pay my damn alimony, bro. Yeah. But it was because I took my foot off the gas, you know? And so it's weird, you know, it's weird. You kind of learn things the hard way. I'm kind of grateful for the experience now, because now it's like, okay, I'm not trying to take my foot off the gas and just live this, you know, awesome lifestyle.
You're not trying to
want something that's going to push me. Otherwise,
lifestyle. Yeah. You're not going to try to sit on a beach for 3 years and get a tan and chub up and sip martinis
it's
or whatever.
It's scary,
right?
Dude. It's just scary at every fucking level when you're like getting to these phases. But I need always something to be working and putting my efforts into. Otherwise, it's just unsatisfying. But at the same time, you know, both my parents have been in the hospital recently, like literally almost dead. My dad's got told his cancer is in his lymph nodes and it's like stage 4. So then they have to do chemo, even though they cut it out. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know what, dude, you do got to find ways to enjoy life, but life's not enjoyable unless you're working hard to enjoy those moments.
Correct.
Right. And so find moments and take your family on vacations and live life and try amazing, whatever foods and go to different cultures and enjoy your family and make sure you make time for your family and all that stuff. But make sure you always are working on something that is pushing you. Otherwise you're just going to feel unfulfilled, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's weird. I'm trying to find that balance of living and enjoying
if
life
you're doing
and
nothing
being pushed
and getting $100,000 a month. I promise you it doesn't feel like what you think it might feel like.
Yeah.
You're going to feel hollow. You're going to feel like a loser. Mm-hmm. And yes, you have a bunch of money, but the fulfillment happens when you're actually pushing yourself and you're accomplishing things. That's where self-worth happens. Contribution. Yeah. Are you contributing to your businesses? Are you contributing to other people's lives, enhancing their life, whether it is, again, giving them opportunities to come up in your business? Are you making other people's lives better?
Yeah.
I guess really what it comes down to through your business and through your employees. And as long as you really keep that at heart and you're contributing in a positive way to other people and you're challenging yourself while you're doing that, then the money becomes a little bit more fulfilling.
It does. So, it does. Totally true. Ever since we started saying, hey, we're going to make millionaires within our company, not just us. Yeah. Like, dude, it does feel different.
It feels
better. Where we're at now versus where I was, you know, 10 years ago when we went through that, literally 2011.
Yeah.
And that's when we and you started partnering up. Like, man, it's totally different. I learned some shit the hard way. Yeah. And so it's hard, man. It's hard to say like, hey, this is what you need to do. Enjoy life. Don't enjoy life. Sacrifice. Don't sacrifice, you know, because life is never guaranteed, you know, but you got to have the means to actually enjoy life. So there's periods where you're going to have to sacrifice, you know, but for Dan, you know, like he's got a badass company and he probably can find ways in his company to, you know, like, hey, you know, like I want to level up people with me and he's probably got some great leaders. He's got a pretty big thing going on. So I'm sure he's figuring it out. So,
yeah. Guys, we hope you enjoyed the Q&A today. I thought it was kind of cool. It's just different topics, different shit.
I thought so.
You know, we might incorporate that a little bit more. So if you see on Instagram that we ask questions for the podcast, make sure that you, you know, throw your name in the hat by throwing a question in there so that we can answer your guys' questions, because we get a lot in the DMs and we can't necessarily go in depth in the DM on, you know, with hundreds of people. We just don't have the time to do that.
Yeah.
And so a lot of, hey, what advice and I've been just saying, listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
All our advice is just on the podcast and we put it down there one time so that people can listen to it whenever they want.
Yeah.
So that we don't have to repeat ourselves over and over and over. But if you have very specific questions, then yes, this will be a good time to get those answers.
Though, there were some great questions this time, but they were a little bit too long, so they cut off. So when you're adding in your question, just make sure that you hit that character limit so we can see the full question.
Yeah.
Oh, and to be clear, you know, like there's some of them, like the transactions and stuff, I was kind of confused on that, but
expensing through your business, I mean, it's not that hard. Any money that goes through your business and that goes out is called an expense. So again, I don't know what exactly.
No, he might have meant something different, but it wasn't clear to us. Yeah. So like just, you know, direct to the point, clear. But yeah, we love to answer questions, man. So if you guys, when you see these come up for like a podcast, especially, you know, shoot us some questions.
Yeah.
It helps us out.
Make sure you're rating, reviewing, doing all that fun, normal stuff that we ask you to do. You guys have done a good job on the uptick there on some of the reviews that we've seen on iTunes. Check us out on YouTube if that's what you prefer. There is a TikTok account. We haven't spent a whole lot of time over there, but
Corey posts in there
every so often.
We got to figure that out. I mean, Steph has some ideas, and I kind of blew her off. We're going to have to try that again.
Anywho, we hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Incorporate the shit that we talk about because we've been through it. We already know what works, what doesn't work, and make sure that you're always pushing yourself, staying uncomfortable. good things will happen over a long period of time. Yeah. So, guys, we hope you enjoyed it. Take care. Kick ass. Have a good day.
Peace.